Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream, where the extraordinary isn't fiction, it's the conversation. What if the ancients didn't just worship the stars, but they actually engineered reality through them? Today on the show, Billy Carson joins us to reveal how lost civilizations understood manifestation, consciousness, and the fractal code of the universe, and how that knowledge can radically change how you can create your life right now. If you'd like to learn more about Billy, go to forbiddenknowledge.com. That's the number 4, biddenknowledge.com. And with that, I bring Billy Carson on the show. Welcome to Dare to Dream.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here.
So great to have you. I feel like finally, I've been watching you for so long, and I want to take first, you know, your brilliance around this subject. I think so many people are fascinated by this subject of creation, frustrated by the subject of creation, or they glory in it because their lives are amazing. I want to get into that. And then I want to get into a little bit about who Billy is. Mm-hmm. So let's start with the ancient cultures.
Yeah.
There are many ancient cultures who taught that consciousness precedes matter. And from your research, Billy, did they see manifestation as a spiritual act, as a scientific process, both, or where does that land?
That's a really, really good question. I depending on the layer of the culture, because there were layers, almost like how we have workers, we have, you know, people in government, and then we have like leaders at the top, these elite leaders. So they had this type of a system in ancient times. Now, there were this group of people, and they called themselves, not all of them, but just a small few. They called themselves the Ordainers of Destiny. Now, this is in the ancient Sumerian, Akkadian, and Babylonian text. And I'm pretty sure if somebody wants to just Google it, they'll find the Ordainers of Destiny. What's interesting about these people is that they masqueraded as gods. They were not gods, but the people were so amazed. The average people around them were so amazed by their high level of knowledge, they thought that these people were actually God from heaven, okay? So they worshiped them, kind of like a cargo cult mentality. Now, when they say ordainer of destiny, they were saying that they can ordain particular destinies and they can control how different future outcomes unfold in the third dimension, in this reality, in their reality. And they really, in my point of view, understood the science, the metaphysics, and the spirituality behind this technique, because some of this stuff is what I teach in my manifestation courses. And they understood that the mind is outside of space and time. They also understood that they can send ripples into the future and alter future realities. And those ripples are coming from conscious thought waves. Mm. They knew that in their mind's eye, they can see potential future outcomes at once. In other words, not just one potential future, they can see multiple futures. And they can isolate the one that they want to bring to fruition through conscious thought backed by action. So they begin to take these action steps on the one they wanted to collapse into reality. And by that method, they literally would send a ripple out in space-time that would collapse the third dimension into that reality. They would rendezvous with that particular outcome at a future point in time. So they understood, like, for example, you know, if everyone's doing this already, but we're not really aware of it. So if I want to manifest a house, I want to create that as my future reality. The first thing a person does is they start, you know, checking their finances to see if they can afford a payment, what their budget would be if they can find a house. And then they start taking action. The conscious thought now is led into action. They start looking for a property. Now you swipe online until you can find something, and you check with the realtor, see if you can take a visit. Now they've multiplied the action by going to take a visit to the property. If the property fits all their needs and their budget, they may then now close on the house. So there'll be an energy exchange that we call currency, And then they collapse that reality into existence, and now they're in that property, they're in that house. So this method is being done by us on a consistent basis. We are just not aware of it. But these people, these beings called the Anunna, some call them the Anunnaki, they were well aware of it. Yeah, and they understood how to do this very, very strategically.
That's a whole new piece right there. That is fascinating. Can you go into more about the Anunnaki? Because, I mean, I understand a piece of their history about their planet, why they came here for the gold in Africa, and, changing up our genetics and wanting us to help out there. I would love to know more about them specifically, these very tall beings that were considered gods at their time.
Well, a lot of people think they only came from this planet written in the Enuma Elish called Nibiru. Now, Nibiru is in the Enuma Elish. However, as I dug deeper into the research and the study, not just into the Sumerian, Akkadian, Babylonian, but also across the board, Egyptian, Star Lore from the Aboriginals in Australia, Star Lore from the indigenous natives of the North Americas. The verbal handed down histories in Bolivia and Peru and other texts in like India, the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, the Indian Vedas, they all are telling one massive story. It's the same story, but when you look at all the texts, all the information, all the stories, they're making a complete picture. And when you look at the artifacts, it backs up that these people originally hailed from the Pleiades. They're Pleiadians. Yes, the
Really?
seven sisters at all points. There's even star maps that exist in the British Museum, cylinder scrolls that show the route from the Pleiades that they took to get to this solar system and to get to other solar systems. So the Pleiades is mentioned in the Bible, it's mentioned in the Egyptian text, it's mentioned in the Sumerian, Akkadian, Babylonian, all the Asian cultures, Indian, North American. And the Hopi tribe called them the Star Brothers, and they say that they were seeded on this planet by Pleiadians. And the Aboriginals, all the way around the world in Australia, they say that they were the first people seeded on this planet by Pleiadians. Two cultures spread across thousands of miles, making the same statement. In this text, there were great wars millions of years ago in that sector of space, and this war broke out. They had a weapon called the Brahmahama Astra. And this weapon was so deadly, it was destroying planets. One of the gods, even though they aren't gods, said that they had a weapon that was so deadly it can destroy any man on three worlds. And can you imagine if a war broke out like that in this solar system? There would be debris flying all over the place. Earth would be one of the potential targets of some huge mass chunk of a moon or Mars or whatever coming right at us. We know that we'd be doomed if we stayed on the planet. This is the first reference that I saw to what I call, I gave them this name, space refugees. Because there's a record where these people start fleeing the Seven Sister area and they start settling in Orion, Aldebaran, Ursa Minor, Ursa Major, Sirius, various different star systems. Earth just happened to be our sun, Sol, happened to be one of the suns as well. And there's a brown dwarf sun, which has six planets orbiting it. One of them is Nibiru. It's 4 to 6 times larger than Earth. So they settle on all these different planets throughout this Milky Way galaxy. Earth is just one of many breakaway civilizations settled by these space refugees. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you. I love learning stuff like this. So I'm going to take this now to the idea that you talk about, which is fractal holographic matrix. And why I love this at this moment is I recently had Danny Goler on the show regarding his simulation theory in DMT. I had Riz Virk on the show regarding simulation theory, video games. And this has elements also of simulation theory or projected experience. So, does that mean basically that reality is not physical, but it is simulated or projected? How does that work?
Yeah, we're living in a projected simulation. So the ancients knew this. The Aboriginals, again, they call it sleepy time. And they say that we're in a time where we believe that we're awake and we believe that everything here is real, but it's actually all a projected delusion that we are really in sleepy time. The indigenous North American natives, I'm sorry for the sun getting on me, they all say that we're living in dream time, right? And also down even into South America, they have this understanding that what is here and what we're perceiving as reality isn't exactly reality. If you look at the ancient Hermetic principles, one of the biggest ones is as above, so below, which is really saying that we're living in a fractal. Because as above, so below means that on the macro scale, you'll find everything on the micro scale. So we're talking about fractals in that ancient Hermetic text. And what they're saying is that the universe is only going to be the macro of our own consciousness and our mind. So if we have a mind, then the universe as a whole is a conscious mind. And so if you want to find out what the universe is up to, let's analyze how our minds work. Our brains are encased in complete darkness. They don't know what's going on outside of the skull, but our brain through the neurological system is directly connected to our sensory perception system. So our sensory perception system are the friends of the brain. And the brain says to its friends, go out there and collect me some information, bring me back some data. The friends go out, they smell, they taste, they see, they touch, they hear. The friends themselves don't fully understand the data, but they transmit it back via the neurological system to the brain. The brain takes that data, raw data, sorts it all out, and projects a hologram as to what it believes is going on out here based on collected data and information. And we navigate through this matrix off of projected data from collected, a hologram from collected data. And so the universe itself, it says, okay, well, how does that work? Well, the universe is a conscious mind. And what are the universe's friends? Every single living thing that exists throughout the known universe. And so it says to its friends, go out here and live your life and experience this third dimension. So we experience this third dimension. We're all a fractal of that one source energy. We are all literally operating from one single consciousness with a slight variance of frequency off. So I'm 99.1, you're 99.2. And so we have this illusion of individuality and separation, but actually we're one and we're broadcasting back to the source. What is it like to experience life as 99.1, which is quote unquote Billy Carson? What is it like to experience life as Debbie Datchinger at 99.2? And so as we live our lives and experience this third dimension and go through trials and tribulations and happy moments and everything else and experience gratitude and experience the lowest levels of depression, whatever it is, all that's being transmitted back to source. And source is now having an experience and understanding what's going on within this realm through its friends, which is collected data from us. Not just even from us, every single individual atom is also vibrating and broadcasting back a signal. And so what I learned through this is not only is the universe a fractal holographic matrix, but is imbued with divine energy. And everything in this universe is alive, even a rock, even a blade of grass, even an individual atom inside this phone, because we know through the double slit experiment in quantum physics that electrons orbit atoms and atom and they make a conscious decision based on observation whether to collapse from a wave into a particle. That's the double slit experiment. And that's wave particle duality called the observer effect. So every atom is conscious. So not only are we conscious, but every atom that makes up our body is conscious. So when you begin to realize that everything is a fractal from the highest to the smallest, and this projected reality is coming from this universal mind, and we're experiencing it, we're kind of collectively experiencing it together, but we're transmitting everything back to the source. And when I'm talking to you, I'm talking to myself. And when you're talking to me, you're talking to yourself. There's
Right.
only one. We have this illusion of separation, but there is no separation.
So separation. I love how you're saying this because I'm a shamanic practitioner. I've been on the shamanic path for a long time, and you keep bringing that into the conversation. And in shamanism, we believe that there's animism in everything. If you want to close that window, it's totally cool.
Yeah, I'm
Go
trying to find a
ahead.
way to give you more light. I'm
Yeah,
sorry,
do
just
your
trying to give you more
thing.
light. Yeah. So you can see, they can see me.
Yeah.
Hard to.
So yeah, there's animism in everything. And just like you're saying, a rock has a soul, a river has a soul, sky has a soul, Clouds have a soul, all of it. There is life and wisdom in everything. And also, when you're talking about these different elements on Earth, and we're all alive, even down to the atom, it also reminds me of Dolores Cannon's books, Convoluted Universe, where she's saying in these sessions, and people are reporting back, I'm the creator of a planet. I'm a cloud. I'm some kind of particle we can't even fathom that this person is talking about and saying this was one of my lifetimes and it was important for them to relay it at the moment. So I really believe in everything you're saying. And it's very exciting to hear this. The duality part has always been really difficult for me. The fact that the source, all that is, would even, if I was source, I think I just want it to be all good and happy. I still can't understand the idea of something we might label anyway as evil, even though evil doesn't think it's evil. But the whole idea of it, even experiencing that, the everything, is always a little bit difficult for me to swallow.
Yeah, it is kind of difficult. We're living in a universe based on consumption. And this particular model of universe, and there are unlimited, infinite numbers of universes. And all of them are probably not running on the same exact programming code. This could be an experiment, and this particular type of universe could be just one of many Googles of experiments that exist. And everything has to consume something in order for something else to come to fruition. It's a very strange way of creating a universe, at least the third dimension, I would say. But one thing I have learned that kind of gives me a little bit of insight and also some inspiration is that, light always seems to overtake the darkness, right? Darkness has its day from time to time. Even a broken clock is right twice a day, right? And so, like, I'm sitting in a room that's decently lit, not the best. I'm in a hotel room. I just got here to hop on this podcast, right? But this room is decently lit. But there's no amount of darkness that I can inject into this room to make the room go completely dark. Not because there's light around. But if I was able to shut the light out or let the sun set and turn all the lights off in here, this room would be completely dark. But all I would have to do is take my cell phone and turn on my camera. And if my camera's light turns on, the darkness will flee from that instantaneously. Sorry, down the phone's ringing. And so it's like, wow, amazing. Light has the power to overcome the darkness. So when we understand that and we walk around as the light, we are the light, we breathe the light, we transmit the light, we make sure that people understand we're the lighthouse on the shoreline, we're the beacon. Come, here's your guideway to come in to shore. I think over time that we always have the upper hand over the darkness.
The lighthouse on the shore. That's a beautiful vision. And I also think about that tarot card where you've got the being on the path. We're holding the lamp, lighting the way. And, thank you to those light workers who choose that path to light the way for all of us. It's beautiful. So, this fractal holographic matrix model, does it essentially explain why intention and thought can alter physical reality?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it breaks down that the way that the ripples work in this third dimension is your consciousness, it sends out waves. And these waves are actually waves of light encoded with data. And how do we know this in science? I can take an EEG cap at a laboratory, put it on your head, non-invasive, it just sits there, and have you think about things. I can show you images on a screen to see what your response will be emotionally. All that data is then transmitted to a computer. So we're watching your brain waves on a computer. We can even tell if you're in a high vibration or a low vibration, and that's all based on the cosine wave. If the height and the trough are good, but the space in between them is far apart, low vibration. If the height and the trough are extra high and extra low, close in, we know you're in a high vibration. And we also know that the mind is transmitting these frequencies out of the skull on a consistent basis. This is why the Akashic records are real, because we're living in what the scientists now call a quantum field. It's just another way of saying the Akashic record. We're on this energetic grid that's interconnected throughout the known universe. So every thought you've ever thought, from the very first time you can make a thought, it has already left your skull and exists in this soup, this energetic grid. And this is how, and some people have the ability to tap into this grid, right? And discern information. But it's all there. Now, when the information leaves your skull, it's encoded with, it piggyback with data. Your conscious thoughts are on there, just like a cell phone. So on this cell phone, I can send a text message. The text message is data. Think of that as the consciousness. The way that it rides out on a wave of light. Cell phones work on light. It's called microwaves. Microwaves, light. We just can't see with our naked eye because we can only see 1% of the light spectrum, but it's a light wave. So they took the same concept as a human avatar, our mind, our consciousness. They connected it to a stream of light, and then your data packets ride out on that light wave as a piggyback until it gets to someone else's device and is decoded. Now, the way that the universe works is, as you transmit this, these conscious thoughts, this intention out into a mirror, which now scientists are calling a quantum field, a quantum mirror, it reflects back at you the same vibration. The data packets are different, but their data packets coming back at you to help you manifest the reality that you're looking to manifest, or their data packets coming back at you because of the vibration that you're in. The law of attraction works in high vibration and it works in low vibration. So if you're at a high vibrational state, you'll have a lot of positivity, motivation, inspiration coming at you. It doesn't mean you'll never have problems, because you will, but you'll be able to navigate them because you're very conscious and aware. In a lower vibrational state, and also, speaking negatively, you'll then attract all those negative aspects of reality. And you'll find that some people in that state have more problems for every solution. They can never get out of a situation. It's always another one coming. And so now, the way that the scientists were doing this, they did an experiment called the quantum mirror. And this was just declassified maybe about now 18 months ago. I had heard about this in 2018 when I went to the Space Symposium, to a private space meeting in Colorado. And they were talking about putting data packets on photons and sending them into a quantum mirror, which is an encapsulated part of the quantum field. And they should be able to get a reflect back of the light coming back from the future. Well, they've done this. And the data packets going in are different than the data packets coming out. And they have not been able to decipher the data packets coming back in this reflection, but it proves that the universe is a mirror and that this field is reflecting back at us as we send intention, as we send cymatic vibrations, conscious thought into the universe. It's reflecting back at us. And that has a huge part and a huge role in how you create your reality. I have a formula called CT multiplied by A equals M. Conscious thought multiplied by action equals manifestation. Everything we do to create the manifestation has to go through that particular phase.
Something popped when you were mentioning, even down to the atoms. Atoms have consciousness. So, if that's true, and this is the first time I've ever wondered about this, but let's say somebody has a disease. It could be anything, arthritis, something that keeps replicating in the body. Does that also have a consciousness? Is there awareness somehow on some level of what it's creating that might be independent of the person who might not prefer that, or the body that might not prefer that? How does that work?
That's a great question. Because we're living in a fractal holographic matrix, everything exists within the body is also a fractal. First, we have three main brains. We have our conscious mind, we have our heart brain, and we have our gut brain, which control most of our daily lives. Mostly the gut brain controls everything, right? And our heart too. We get in trouble with our heart because we follow our heart, but we don't take our brain with us sometimes, right? But then if you go to the fractalized scale, every individual cell in the body is also a conscious universe. Every individual cell. They discovered that the cells have, of course, we know the mitochondria, they have energy, they have an entire ecosystem inside of each individual cell. And they discovered that the cells communicate. They can communicate with each other through vibration.
Trees and
Cells,
mushrooms, like the mycelium.
like the mycelium network, yeah. they actually communicate. So we're walking around with a multiverse inside of our bodies. And we have billions of microbes living inside of us, living inside of their own multiverses. And they're, and they're conscious, which is incredible. And so we are a walking universe because we're a fractal of the universe itself, as above, so below. And now these diseases and illnesses, those cells that are making up that, they are creating their own reality. Of course, they're malformed and creating situations and issues in the body, but they are only consciously aware of what their instructions are to create. So each cell has a code. And these codes also are fed, are modified by hormonal codes. Every time a hormone is released in the body, those hormones carry programming codes through the body. That's how the body functions. And sometimes if a group of cells is getting too much of one hormone or not enough of one hormone, then they start doing their own thing. So there's like there's no parent there to guide them. There's no police force to make sure they're living within their parameters, and they just kind of go wild like the Wild Wild West. And this creates dis-ease, which turns into disease, which you'll be pushing up daisies. And sometimes you have a situation where we're making ourselves sick through our conscious thoughts, bad, poor self-talk, or we're a person that can be very vicious towards other people, not realizing that what we're saying towards other people, our cells can hear every single bit of it. And our cells don't know you're talking to someone else. Our cells think you're talking to yourself. And it's the same old experiment they did at the university where they had a plant on one side of the university and a plant on the other side. Both plants, the same exact age, same size. They had the kids from that experiment speaking nasty to one plant and speaking loving to the other plant. One withered and died, the other one grew and prospered. And, the same thing with our bodies. Our bodies are mostly water, 70% water. And Masuda Emoto proved that if you speak to water, intentionally and calmly and peacefully and loving, the cells, the water droplets crystallize. But if you don't, they malform. And it could be that a lot of us are malforming our cells by our own conscious thoughts, our own conscious actions, our own attacks on other people, and this turns into disease in the body as well.
Powerful, very powerful. Back again in ancient civilization, when Egypt was called Kemet, meaning black land, by its ancient inhabitants, there was sacred geometry that was embedded into the temples and into the shrines. Were those structures designed to activate human consciousness, not just to honor the gods? Were they meant to activate the people back then? And then how? How did they do the activation?
Oh yeah. So that's a great question. I take people on tours all over the world nonstop. This is one of my biggest tour years. I'm going to like five countries this year. And one thing I do see at all these sites, the encoded ancient wisdom that's been left behind. Like there's the flower of life embossed into the columns at the Osirian in Abydos, Egypt, which is a very hard place to get to and very hard to even get permission to go down into the Osirian. These temples and these structures and these ancient pyramids, they all have a particular level of healing power. Okay. Now, the way that they work is the fundamental access point for anyone without any knowledge of how these temples activate is to just go there, be present, and absorb the energy, and you'll feel better. People go there with heart problems, hip problems, injuries, and they can just go through the tour, and at the end of the tour, they feel better. They can't even explain it. One lady on our last tour went back to her doctor, and her heart injury was healed. And the doctor said, "What did you do?" She said, "I just went to Egypt." And so now, these temples, in terms of activation, there's levels of them that we just can't understand. Now, the first base level is healing in all these sites. You can just show up and you can absorb this energy. But just like this laptop that I'm on right now, this laptop is multifunctional. It has so many functions it can do, not just let me do this live video with you, right? If I have a little bit of knowledge, I can check email and I can do Google searches on it, right? But somebody coming in behind me that has a little bit more knowledge than me can get on this same exact laptop and they can actually design a home. They can do an architectural layout and a blueprint to give to an engineer to build a whole structure. Somebody coming in behind them can design a rocket. They might design a rocket that can fly all the way to the moon and maybe even beyond. right? But using the same device, not no different, no add-ons, no changes or modifications. They just understand different levels of how to activate certain other parts of this device that can create things that can be manifested into reality. So the base level of this computer is just checking email and Google searches, but there's so many levels and stages above that. These ancient sites are just like that. The base level is healing. Above that, there's activations and multidimensional consciousness and Kundalini awakenings and even technological purposes like power generation, communication to other star systems. All these things exist within these sites. To activate them to those levels, to my personal opinion, nobody has really figured that particular thing out. People have tried. I do know one thing that's simple. You can just go there, be present, and you can get some healing energy.
Very nice. Well, I want to take a quick pause, my friends. I want to go a little deeper into this work with you. I've got something special. If you would like to learn your galactic lineage, where are you from in the stars? And for most of us, it's lots of places, but you can relate once you see this list, watch this video. My gift to you is for you to receive your galactic origins. You can go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. It's Debbie with an I, Dashinger with a C, debbiedashinger.com/starseed. Next, we've got a very exciting event really coming up quickly. That's February 20th to the 23rd, live in Los Angeles, Conscious Life Expo. This is their 24th annual. Billy Carson is speaking there, presenting there. He's on panels. I will be there as well. I'm moderating three panels, speaking in the play Saturday night, and I'm doing live podcasting. So I'll be very busy as well. Come meet us in person. Get your tickets now. Don't miss this. It's at debbiedashinger.com/CLE. And all the links are down below in the show notes, in the description. Also, I am doing two shamanic healings coming up. One is a full moon ceremony, and one is an animal spirit code activation. So you can get animal medicine, the wisdom from these beautiful animals that will help you through 2026. Just go to my website, sign up, and when that gets rolled out, you will get notified. And finally, if this conversation means something to you, hype it. Like it, subscribe, comment. I love reading all your comments because you support us by taking these actions right now. And this way we can reach way more star seeds and light workers all around the world. We like to be very supported by our community too. So thank you in advance for that. Billy, I am so curious about you because listening to you speak for these many years, I've often thought, how does this man know what he knows? It's really impressive the depth, the intricacies of the information, and how you're able to disseminate to the layperson. And then I saw, oh, okay, he has a certificate of neuroscience from MIT. Check. He's got a certificate in ancient civilizations from Harvard. Check. Starting to make sense. So you're a kid, I think you grew up in New York, is that right?
I was
And
born in New York, but I grew up in Miami.
in Miami. Okay, I was born and grew up in New York. What was your fascination? Did you have a fascination back then that manifested into these certifications? And have you always been like this?
Yeah, I just had a real fascination with information and knowledge. My father saw at a very young age I had the ability to read. So I was reading at a very, very young age. And when he saw that, the one thing I got to give him credit for, he started making me do book reports. And so, I'd be a little tiny kid, and I started in New York before I got to Miami. And I'd do these book reports, and at first, very simple. But then, as I got a little older, and he saw I can read even more complex books, he gave me a novel. It was The Seawolf by Jack London. And that was my very first novel that I read. And I did a book report on that. And he was so impressed, he would take me to bars where his buddies in the 70s. He'd take me to these bars and put me on the bar top and have me reciting all kind of things, because I had a decent memory. So the book reports, he'd get in trouble when we got home, I mean, real bad trouble. But the book reports really helped me develop comprehension. And so through the comprehension of what I was reading, and right now in school, you go to school, they just teach you how to memorize the answers. There's no working through solutions to come to figure out the problem. And so everyone's regurgitating information like a robot, like a parrot. I was actually able to begin very early learning how to come up with the discernment of what I was reading, what I was taking in. And I think that helped carry me into my adulthood. And I always had this huge, huge quench and thirst for information. When I got to Miami, not too many, I think it was only a year, no, maybe a half a year later, the Encyclopedia Salesman showed up at the house, And this is, I think, 77 or 78. He comes with this whole, case, and he drops them off and he says, "It's only $10 a month." And my mom couldn't even afford $10 a month, but he dropped them off and she did give him the first payment. He never came back. He never came back. But I had all these books. I had biology, I had chemistry, I had economics, I had physics, I had aerospace, I had astrophysics, I had everything. And I just dove into those books. Those was my escape from, living in abject poverty. It was really nothing for me to do, nothing, nothing to eat. I'd eat Cairo syrup and toast. I'd eat matzo crackers and butter most of the time. I would go steal fruits off the neighbor's trees. I would bathe in the backyard by connecting a water hose to my neighbor's house. And because we had a backed up sewage problem and we couldn't afford to fix it, And so that's the kind of level. But the books were my escape out of that turmoil and out of that detriment. And so I really just dove into that information. And so learning for me has always been a passion. Taking in information in. And then I noticed when I got to high school that I had the capability of piecing together information over different timelines. And so I was able to connect the dots to things that other people, for whatever reason, they just couldn't see it. And I remember when I took my first IQ test about maybe now 7 years ago, it's all about pattern recognition. And I got a really high score. And I was like, this makes sense. My pattern recognition is why I've been able to make all these connections. My pattern recognition was very, very high. And so I think that's what it is. My early on, though, when you start with a kid, you can teach them five languages when they're like between the ages of 1 to like 10. So me starting with all that studying and researching and doing all those book reports, it just built a catalog inside of my head.
Amazing too, because a lot of people can read voraciously, but it doesn't necessarily mean they'll retain the information, nor that they can pull it out and get A and B and Z to connect and mean something. So that's, it feels like that's a two-part gift that you have. I'm also so curious because for me, when I've listened to you, I've just wondered about your connection with the extraterrestrials. I personally, to pull back the curtain, I was not only a skeptic, I was an eye roller forever, deeply spiritual, but no, not that. And then I had a profound awakening around it. And now, deeply into that, I've had many UFO experiences, extraterrestrial experiences. I think once they knew I was online, I was like, bring it, she's ready. And I'm curious about you as well, how much you have relationships or experiences like that, and if they also inform who you are and what you can speak to.
Yeah, well, that's what sent me down the path that I'm on. Back in 77, when I was in the backyard playing outside, just looking up at the sky, watching those little prop planes go over there. Taking a very slow time, making a lot of noise. They came from the Opa-locka Airport, which is right by where I lived. And all of a sudden, this one day, this object came across and it cleared the horizon in seconds, went all the way across. It was like an elongated egg. It looked like what I would say glowing metal. Can't say anything else. No wing, no cockpit, no windows, nothing. And it just wasn't, from my perspective, it wasn't an airplane. And just as I was so amazed and surprised at what I saw and was almost turning to run in the house, it came back, but then it just stopped like that. And it was much lower. Now, at my age, I can estimate probably like maybe 90 meters above me, completely silent, but maybe 2, 3 seconds, and then toot, it was gone. And then I ran in the house and I told my mom what I saw and what happened. And she said, "Son, In the ancient past, there were advanced beings that lived on tops of mountains. This is in the 70s, and my mom tells me this. She says, you need to go to Machu Picchu. And that's why in my first book, Compendium of the Emerald Tablets, there's a picture that I took with my own camera at Machu Picchu. And underneath that, I wrote a dedication to my mom because I finally made it to Machu Picchu. She had long since passed away by then. Yeah. So these encounters are real. And then I had a second encounter in 2010, which to me was more like an encounter of the fourth kind. And it took me a while to talk about that one because it was really, for a while, it was extremely traumatic. I've done a lot of trauma work on this topic now, so I don't really get as destroyed as I used to talking about it. I had a lot of PTSD I had to work through on this, but they came in my house. It was about 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. I was watching ESPN highlights, updates on TV, and the room turned this lavender color, and the TV shut down. I thought my boys were playing a trick on me. They weren't behind me when I looked over my left shoulder. When I turned around, these two beings were just standing right there. They had to be maybe four. I'm pretty tall. I'm 6'4", and I'm sitting in a chair probably about the height of the one I'm in now. So that means they'd probably be about 4.5 feet tall. But they were standing and I was sitting, and they were right in front of my face, within inches of my face. Their eyes looked more like coverings, grid, hexagonal type coverings, a pattern inside of there. Not necessarily like real eyes, maybe some type of protection. I don't know. Just looks like a slit for a mouth, little tiny slit for ears and little slits for a nose. No real nose structure, no bridge. They weren't really gray, even though they did look like the hypothetical, typical gray type style, but they were more taupe-ish color. And it looked like they had on a body type suit, very long, dangly fingers. And my brain felt like it was shaking in my skull. I tried to scream. There was no sound coming out my vocal cords. Zero. It was like I was muted. And with just as quick as it started, it stopped, and they kind of bounced out. They don't walk like we walk. Well, at least from my perspective, they didn't walk like a human. They almost like they were on strings. They just kind of dangled in a weird kind of way, like the gravity wasn't affecting them. I don't know. I don't even know what it was. But they bounced out, and they went right through the wall. And then the lights came back on, the TV came back on, and I went running around the house and it scared everybody in my family. I ended up getting a divorce. One of my sons is like estranged from me still to this day. But I didn't get a lot of good out of it. It really was a thing that created a lot of trauma. But one thing that did come out of it that put me on this path was this phrase was burning in my mind. Worldwide telescope, worldwide telescope, worldwide telescope, over and over, thousands of times. So I went to my computer, and at that time, it wasn't Google that was like the big search engine. It was Excite.com. And I typed into Excite.com. I said, okay, worldwide telescope, what is this? And the first search result that popped up is worldwidetelescope.org. And I almost fell out of my chair. I went to the site. It turns out it's the site where all the space probe data that has been paid for by taxpayers and private corporations exists in a format that you can actually see the data. You can see the imagery. You can see the probes, what the probes have recorded, the rovers on Mars. You can see from the mass cam view. You could pan left, right, zoom in, and zoom out. And so I said, okay, so let's take a look. I installed the software and I went in. And the first thing I saw that was curious to me was like Mars. I was like, wait, Mars. Then I saw Mars panoramas. I said, okay, Mars panoramas, click. And then I saw a Spirit rover, Opportunity rover. I was like, wow, really? So I clicked Opportunity rover. I go in and I'm looking around on Mars from the perspective of the rover from pre-stitched images, but it gives you that realistic feeling as if you're doing it in real time. But all the imagery is real. And I start seeing things that didn't belong on the surface of Mars, anomalies, structures that look like what I would say see down here in an ancient civilization that's collapsed, like in Peru or Egypt, broken stones that are put together in a way where they're almost molded together, but pieces of walls and other objects that just didn't appear like they matched the surrounding terrain. And that got me into Mars anomaly hunting. And then I ended up finding a group of people on Facebook, and we built these groups called the United Family of Anomaly Hunters. And a lot of our anomalies made it to mainstream news, CNN, Fox, Huffington Post, I mean, you name it. We had stuff showing up on Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. They were like, what is this? And so a lot of these anomalies are, and we're still searching to this very day. But that experience set me on that path.
Amazing. Was there, do you feel, even if it was subconscious or like getting a zip file, do you feel like there was a transmission, an activation, family, star family, anything along those lines?
All I can think is that they activated something inside of me or transmitted some type of, at least that initial phrase. They knew that I'm a person that once I get any bit of information, I'm going to go dig into it. And they probably realized if we drop this into his mind, he's going to go deep into this and he's going to realize that Mars is linked to the ancient Sumerian tablets. Because through that research of those anomalies, I said, I got to go look in these texts because they keep calling Mars the god of war in these texts. There's got to be more to this. And then I start finding out in the Akkadian and Babylonian texts that they talk about Mars as being part of this civilization. It was a concurrent civilization running on Earth and Mars at the same time. And they had people living there called the Ijiji in the British Museum. You can find these tablets. They called themselves the Ijiji. They were the working class gods or the Anunnaki, the lower class Anunnaki. So if you're an architect, then you have an engineer, and those two guys ain't touching no dirt, but they'll have a foreman, and the foreman will oversee the workers. They're all in construction. There's a hierarchy though, and so these particular Ijiji beings, they were going to go to war, and they started a war against Earth because they felt like they were being enslaved and put to do too much work. Specifically, they were doing too much work on Mars. And so I said, this is crazy. They're talking about Mars. They talked about burying one of these Ijiji. No, I'm sorry. They're talking about burying this god named Alu, one of the Anunnaki, on Mars. And I'm going, Mars is tied into these ancient texts. I just can't see people thousands of years ago writing sci-fi movies like this when they're trying to worry about how they're going to survive tonight and feed their village. So there's got to be some truth to this myth, you know? And that led me into deeper into ancient civilizations.
My gosh, this is amazing. I always, when I hear something as you like how you're telling it from a beginning, and there's an arc for me listening to a mess becomes a message to like the right guy, and certain things have to happen to activate you to step into who you really are. I'm sure your soul on many lifetimes has had this brilliance as well. And then I know from watching Joe Rogan that you are friends with Terrence Howard. Who knew? I mean, who the heck knew? I once upon a time was a professional actress. I've been watching him forever. He's amazing. But I had no idea what existed, the genius
Crazy
within
for me.
him. So tell me about your friendship with Terrence and what is it like for the two of you to hang out together?
Oh man, he's a great guy. He's so gentle and like soft. He doesn't, he's not aggressive. He doesn't like snap or anything. He's just very calm, cool, collective guy. One day I was in Texas making a podcast run. I was headed to Joe Rogan's podcast, actually. I'm in Austin, Texas, and I get this phone call. I don't answer it. I'm like, who's this calling me? I get this another phone, second phone call. I don't answer it again. Third call comes in. I go, who is this? Because I don't answer that many calls. I don't know. I answer the phone. It's Terrence Howard. So he got my number and we had a great conversation. We hit it off right from the beginning. And then we did a couple of Instagram lives and we had a lot of private conversations and talks. I did a couple of like private Zoom meetings with him and his team and his family, his sons and stuff like that. And we had a lot of great conversations, just on philosophy, but also science. I really got to understand his perspective of science being quote unquote untrained or self-learned. Self-learn really gives you the ability to expand beyond the box. Because when you're trained and when you're taught through university, through the standardized system, everything has parameters. And you're taught, don't go outside these parameters. But when you're self-taught, you don't have any parameters. So you kind of break through. And is it always accurate? No. But it gives you the ability to push science to the absolute limits. And what I saw from his work is he pushed science to the limits and he came up with something so unique and so incredible. And everyone tried to, not everyone, but a lot of the podcasters who had him on and they tried to make him look like he didn't know what he was talking about. They try to make him seem like he was a bumbling idiot, or he didn't have any knowledge. This guy is an absolute genius. He's such a genius that there are companies out there that want his science. Now, if his science wasn't worth anything, why would people want it? Why would they want it? I'm not talking about just like saying, hey, can you give it to us? I'm talking about they want to buy it. And so that tells you that his science is real. Now, I saw firsthand his science actually working with the linchpins, the linchpin flying technology. And we were actually going to launch an Indiegogo, community fundraiser to build one to have an event and have him fly it over at the event. But before I can get to that point, somebody had already approached him for the technology. This technology was built by several inventors, open sourced as a beta test, and all of them flew, every single one. There's videos of it on YouTube of them flying around, so it's like public knowledge now. And I was like, this man really invented something miraculous in this era, and these people don't want to see it simply because they don't want to give him the credit that they feel they deserve for whatever, they want all the credit for these inventions or understandings or updates or transformations of science. They don't want to give it to him because he's an actor. The man is an absolute genius. He plays like five instruments. He can sing, he can act, he can write music, and he understands quantum physics in a way that I've never met anyone that understood it in that way before. He knows how to push the threshold of mathematics. He understands how to combine philosophy into mathematics, and he knows how to create objects or technological objects based on his form of science, and they work. He's got a lot of patents.
My gosh. Well, he was such a massive, impressive surprise to me. I can completely see how you guys would jive together and how that would be a beautiful friendship, this exchange of information and wisdom that you can bounce off of each other. And I never would have known if I hadn't have seen him live. I had to do it in chunks because even in the interview, he gives out such advanced information that clearly he completely comprehends to be able to explain it. And you really have to stick with it and be open. And a lot of what you're saying, it's really true, this shutdown attitude or, trying to debunk, and it's happening in archaeology these days. We went to school and we learned this, and this is how it's done, and this is what exists in history, and this couldn't possibly, and that's clearly not true because what's being shown, not just Graham Hancock, but what they're finding, like the tunnels under the earth. And it's amazing what exists right now. If ever there was a time to be open, it's now. Nothing we're living in is a one and done conversation.
Facts. Absolutely. Science is all about, searching, looking, bending, breaking until you find another way or find out what other ways exist and find out there maybe is no other way. But just staying inside of a box and calling it science is not any kind of progress in my book.
That's right. Well, if all of us, modern humanity, fully remembered this ancient knowledge and now very modern and available to us knowledge that you've been talking about, how would our economic, spiritual, and technological systems change overnight?
It would be miraculous. First of all, we would see lifespans extended because Big Pharma wouldn't be the Big Pharma we know today. It would be completely transformed into longevity and real, true healing. And they would be collaborators with humanity instead of people that are looking to just monetize humanity. And I hate to use the word, but they virtually execute us after they get done using up all of our money and bring up the next one. But if they, in the new world, they would be collaborators. The people who are in those companies would be conscious, spiritual beings, and everything that would be there to help and enhance us, truly enhance us. AI and automation would come to help bring a whole new wave of prosthetics, conscious learning. Instead of having to go to school for 12 years in grade school to high school and then go to college for another 5, 6, sometimes 10 years, there'll be devices that you just sit on your crown, and that device will transmit directly into the mind knowledge, but it'll be done in increments. So you'll have like first grade through fourth grade will be done within maybe only a couple of months. And then there'll be social gatherings for the children for integration and also social, social aspect of like learning how to be around other kids and people, right? Social learning. And then there'll be these chunks, but a person by the time they're maybe 10 or 12 years old would have done everything from grade school all the way to college. So that's going to be the future as well. And then the transformation of understanding the power that's already in us, we become more reliant on ourselves. On our and go to inner space than rather relying on some type of outside source to come and somehow save us, and really giving all of our energy and power to poly tricksters and religious figures and famous people and celebrities. We'll look more towards inward, towards ourselves, and because our inner space will become more fulfilled and we'll be truly happy with ourselves, that's going to be as within, so without. The outer world is also going to reflect our inner world because we are also reflecting like a mirror. And so that will become the new virus, right? Spiritual, happy, conscious understanding, love for one another, service to others. We wouldn't be fighting over, hey, your skin reflects the sunlight different than my skin and all these crazy concepts. That's just like, what are you guys talking about? That divide and conquer stuff will just fade away. And we can really build an incredible golden age on this planet. And the ultimate golden age is one that can sustain itself. There's been so many golden ages. According to a lot of the ancient tribes, we've already gone through four golden ages, and we're heading into a fifth particular age where we're trying to build back to a golden age in this age of Aquarius. But nowhere have I ever read or heard that age has to collapse. It just does. We need to get to maybe the ultimate experiment with humanity is, can we sustain a golden age? Can we get to the golden age and sustain it and not collapse? And so maybe that's the ultimate goal.
Absolutely. That duality.
Yeah.
About anticipating or seeing the future with the galactic community and now we're becoming part of it. Do you sense in our lifetime that's going to happen?
Oh, yeah. I think that it can happen. I mean, not right now, there's enough longevity experiments going on that you and I, if we can live another 15 years, we should live to about 150, 200 years old, unless barring any other weird, strange thing that happens that can't be fixed. So within our lifetimes right now, making that statement is realistic. I believe that humanity is like a baby, right? We're like a baby learning how to crawl. We're crawling right now. And we want to stand up. We're trying to get to the edge of a table or a bed. There's something to pull ourselves up. And we're in that stage. Once humanity does stand up, it's going to be like, ah, we made it. But what happens with a baby when it takes its first two steps? It falls. It falls, it plops down, it cries, it screams, right? But then what happens? It says, ah, okay, I'm going to try again. So it crawls up, it pulls itself up again, it tries again. It takes about four or five more steps. When it falls the second time, it makes a little bit of noise, but not as bad as the first time because it realizes, oh, I can get right back up again. And then the baby gets up and now it starts to learn how to walk. And the definition of walking in the dictionary is learning how to control your fall. So when humanity becomes a child that can walk and we learn how to control our fall, then we'll get the visitors will come in. Then we'll get a seat at the table. Then we'll get to join the big party because we're no longer babies that can't walk. We've got to pull ourselves up as a civilization, as a species. There's 8.4 billion of us being controlled by less than 100 families. And as you can see on the news, these people are up to no good. I mean, absolute no good. They're running roughshod across the entire planet at our expense. And in some way, we have to realize that we all have to come together, organize, and we've got to remove these people from positions of power. And we've got to change the way that this frequency is on this planet. And that's a huge part of getting up and starting to learn how to walk.
Amazing. Learning how to control how we fall
Yeah.
individually and collectively. Well said. Billy Carson, how can people find you? What's next? And then tell us a little bit about Conscious Life Expo.
They can find me on forbiddenknowledge.com with the number four. I also have an online academy. It's 4bkacademy.com with the number four. The academy's got 1,700 incredible leaders in it. They can come over there and I'll be their mentor for free for 7 days. And I'm looking forward to coming to the Conscious Life Expo and this month, in just a couple of weeks. Incredible talks on the fractal holographic nature of the universe, manifesting, how to activate the manifestation codes that we already have. I'll be talking about, of course, ancient civilizations, the underground labyrinth in Giza and other places around the world that have been discovered. And also, I'll be on two amazing panels. So it'll be a huge weekend of incredible lectures, talking, and panel discussions. So make sure you come out to the Conscious Life Expo 2026.
Right on. Yeah. Thank you for coming on the show today. And last question, Billy Carson, what do you next dare to dream? Future dreams or goals, what are they?
My future dream is to really create a huge homelessness program. I want to really find a way to solve the homeless program, the homeless homelessness in America by through a program that I want to develop. At one point, I was homeless. I was homeless not for a long time, but I was homeless for a week. And I know what it feels like to be like, okay, what am I going to do now? I had gotten to a place where I had lost everything. It's a long time ago, obviously, but I lost everything and I had to find a way out. Now, I was fortunate. I was able to find a way out and I had some level of sanity in my mind that allowed me to still do that. A lot of people that are facing some of those homeless situations, they are struggling with some other mental health issues that I just didn't have, right? And we need to do SPECT scans of all their brains with Dr. Daniel Amen and Amen Clinics. We need to have real psychiatrists not prescribe them drugs, but give them a regimen and supplements like I was on for my brain injury from my car accident that completely healed my brain injury. They can actually have the same experience. And then to put them in miniature homes around the country in places and give them some menial work to do so they can feel like they're contributing to society, give them some purpose. And so that's a project that I'm looking forward to.
We end today's show with this thought. Perhaps manifestation was never magic after all. It was memory, a remembering of who we are, how reality listens, and the ancient truth that consciousness has always been the architect of worlds. This has been Dare to Dream for curious souls connecting with extraterrestrial life, higher dimensions, and ancient shamanic wisdom. Next week on the show, I am featuring yet again another conversation with Daryl Anka. Be sure to tune in. Thanks for joining us today and create good things. Control how you walk, and it's okay to fall. Let's all get there together and create a much better reality.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.